From ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. North Korea issuing a stern warning after President Trump said Kim Jong-un faces big trouble if Guam is threatened with missiles. The escalating rhetoric met with calls for calm from China, and allies are weighing in too. ABC Chief Global Affairs Correspondent Martha Raddatz has more from Seoul, South Korea.
Worldwide, America's allies promised to rush to America's side. Japan, South Korea, and Australia all vowing to help, but a rebuke from German Chancellor Angela Merkel saying, I think an escalation in language is not the answer.
ABC's Martha Raddatz. While tensions mount between the U.S. and North Korea, President Trump is speaking out about Venezuela, saying the U.S. military could intervene in the civil war against President Nicolas Maduro. ABC News contributor and former Defense Department official Colonel Steve Ganyard has more.
I think he's only turning up the heat a bit on Maduro. It's a civil war in Venezuela. There's no place for the U.S. military. Which side would we take? That said, there are always plans in place for non-combatant evacuation of U.S. citizens and embassy personnel. That could be what he's referring to, but certainly not a place where we'd want to get involved.
White nationalists clashing with protesters at the University of Virginia Friday night. Things have turned violent, officials bracing for more demonstrations today. ABC's Stephanie Ramos is in Charlottesville.
A dramatic scene as white nationalists carrying torches flooded this major American college campus. Several injured and one person arrested as hundreds of alt-right activists demonstrating at the University of Virginia clashed with counter-protesters. Police calling it an unlawful assembly, dispersing the crowds after fights break out between the two sides. Some protesters reportedly being hit in the face with pepper spray.
ABC Stephanie Ramos. Lottery officials say the sole winning ticket for Friday's Mega Millions jackpot sold in Illinois. That ticket worth an estimated $393 million. Up next, Powerball tonight. You're listening to ABC News.
Here's a special message for those of you who owe the IRS at least $10,000 or more in back taxes. The IRS has special programs in place that could eliminate or reduce your tax debt by thousands of dollars. Call the Blue Ocean Tax Helpline that's been set up for you. 800-288-4871. Stop the wage garnishments, levies, and tax liens now. Once you've qualified and enrolled, the IRS will stop all the collection activities against you. These unique programs have been allocated to help the economy and significantly reduce or eliminate your tax burden. The IRS is currently accepting reduced settlements and other favorable programs. You may qualify for substantial savings, so call and speak with a licensed professional today. If you owe more than $10,000 in taxes, call for free information and to see if you qualify. Take down the number now for the Blue Ocean Tax Hotline. 800-288-4871. That's 800-288-4871. Again, 800-288-4871.
The KGMI Morning Show.
We've got a problem, Whatcom County. Well, this is in the farming realm. This is the farming edition of the Morning Show, by the way. That's why we're an hour early on this Saturday morning, where we talk about issues that are important to agriculture in Whatcom and Skagit counties in the Pacific Northwest. Agriculture, farming, has a problem. One of the big field crops around here, corn. Corn grown for cow feed, for the dairy industry, is infested, well, not every field, but some fields, infested with a bug that's damaging the crop and, because of its spread, could explode in populations into a nightmare situation next year, could already be a really bad thing for this year's crop. We're going to talk with Lance Honkoop, an agronomist with Ellenbos Agronomy, and my cousin. He called this to our attention last week as a bit of a heads up, and this week he's got an update, and it's not good news. It's looking worse and worse the more fields he inspects and the more they try to treat and get on top of this problem. So he'll join us, talk about what's going on out there, what they're finding, what some of the options are, and just what the risks of damage this year and of an exploding problem next year could be. So stay with us for that. That's the first half. In the second half, we get the lowdown on what happened at Sarbanand Farms, this blueberry farm out in Sumas. The worker that passed away, what was the deal there? The workers that then had complaints about working conditions, what's the truth? We're going to talk with Cliff Woolley with Sarbanand Farms and the parent company Munger Farms. So he'll join us in the second half. We've got a lot straight ahead here on the Farming Edition this morning. And again, I'm your host, Dylan Honkoop. Our sponsors, Laurel Farm and Western Supply, as well as Farmers Equipment Company. And right now, it is time for your local news update.
KGMI News Update.
KGMI News Time, 7:05, 59 degrees in Bellingham, heading for a cloudy high of 70 today. The woman who died in the Whatcom County Jail Thursday has now been identified. Records show Paula Jefferson of Lummi Reservation was arrested on suspicion of DUI. The Bellingham Herald reports Jefferson was found unconscious in the so-called drunk tank cell at the jail shortly after noon Thursday and did not respond to CPR. The state continues to investigate a Sumas blueberry farm after a Mexican farm worker died. Meanwhile, Cliff Woolley with Sarbanen Farm says the company is paying to send the man's co-workers back home.
We gave them the choice. They can either fly home or ride a bus home, and we will pay their expenses and also give them cash for travel. And so they're just signing up on the list of which way they want to go home.
Ernesto Silva Ibarra complained of headaches after picking blueberries. He later passed away at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. The death led to labor strife and a volley of accusations between the Mexican workers and Sarbanen management. A Bellingham Coast Guard crew made a drug bust on the water. The Coast Guard says they discovered amphetamines, prescription pills, and cash on a boat near Anacortes Wednesday. They arrested the two people aboard the recreational craft. If you live on Bellingham's south side, water may still be on your mind. The water main break on Donovan Avenue from yesterday was repaired early evening yesterday. If you were in an impacted neighborhood, the city says if your tap water is murky following restoration of service, let the water run several minutes through a large outflow like an outdoor hose and call the city if you have concerns about water quality. It is fair time.
Take me to the fair.
The Northwest Washington Fair kicks off on Monday. The carnival rides, fair food, animals, exhibits, and grandstand entertainment continues through next Saturday. The Demo Derby entertains the grandstand crowd on Monday. Gates open at 9 each morning and close at 10 in the evening. Carnival hours are 11 to 11 each day. Ferndale is welcoming back its World Series team. A celebration is scheduled for today from 2 in the afternoon until 6 tonight. The Ferndale Cal Ripken 12U baseball team won its World Series title Thursday. Second Avenue in Ferndale between Main and Vista will be closed for the event starting at noon today. The Lummi Island Ferry will shut down early tomorrow. Crews are doing work on the Gooseberry Point dock. Ferry service will stop at 10:20 tomorrow night. The Whatcom Chief is expected to return to a normal schedule on Monday. KGMI dependable forecast, partly cloudy and 70 today. Winds south at 10 on the water, cloudy and 58 tonight. A good chance of rain tomorrow, finally. Tomorrow morning through the afternoon might see some rain, about a 50% chance. High of 67 tomorrow. Outside this morning at the top of Mount Baker, it's 52. Out on the water, East Sound Orcas Island checking in at 57 this morning. Here at Bellingham, it's 59. Mike Davis, KGMI News.
The backcountry trails are open now, so make your next trail ride or backcountry pack trip a whole lot easier. Check out Laurel Farm and Western Supply's selection of products from Outfitter Supply Essential Gear. When you're on the trail, Outfitter Supply offers quality trail riding gear, horse packing equipment, pack saddles, saddle panners, hunting and camping supplies for those of us who like to enjoy the outdoors on horseback. We also carry weed-free hay and pack feed cubes, everything you need for your next trip. Laurel Farm is also offering a great promotion on Purina exclusive dog food and senior horse feed. The ingredients in Purina exclusive dog food were chosen to give dogs what they like and need. And right now, if you buy a 30-pound bag of exclusive dog food, you'll get $8 off your next 50-pound bag of Purina Impact Professional Senior Horse Feed. Come see us today. We're on the Laurel Road, or check us out on our website at laurelfarmsupply.com. Come see why we're the number one Western supply store in Whatcom County.
KGMI Sports.
On the diamond, former Seattle Mariners star Edgar Martinez has his speech all set to go when his number 11 is retired by the Mariners this weekend. Martinez will be the second former player to have his number retired by the Mariners, an honor that was announced in January. Ken Griffey Jr.'s number was retired a year ago following his induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Martinez, who is the Mariners' current hitting coach, will be celebrated all weekend long at Safeco. Last night was Edgar bobblehead night. Today, his number goes up in center field next to Griffey Jr. and Jackie Robinson during a pregame ceremony. And tomorrow's Edgar Martinez replica jersey day at Safeco. In last night's matchup, Mike Trout scored from second base on Gene Segura's error in the top of the ninth. as the L.A. Angels rallied from a four-run deficit for a 6-5 win over the Mariners. Today's game is a 5 p.m. pregame, 6:10 first pitch on our sister station, AM 1170, KPUG. On the field, Seattle Sounders have added to their midfield, finalizing a deal to acquire Callum Mallis from the Montreal Impact. The 27-year-old has 80 career MLS appearances with one goal and six assists. WNBA Seattle Storm are looking to improve in their 10-16 record tonight on the road against the Phoenix Mercury. This will be the first game under interim head coach Gary Kloppenberg after the firing of head coach Jenny Bocek on Thursday. The Bellingham Slam are back on the court today for a noon matchup against Worldwide SM. The Slam are 4-3 on the year so far. Playoffs start next weekend. On the grid, Seahawks face the Los Angeles Chargers tomorrow in their preseason opener. They'll fly to L.A. with a relatively healthy roster. That does not, however, mean everyone will play. Doug Baldwin, who had a bit of an injury scare Thursday, leaving practice after K.J. Wright fell on his leg, escaped without significant injury, but he did not practice yesterday, and he will not play tomorrow. You can hear that game tomorrow on our sister station, Classic Hits, K-Bay, 98.9 FM, 9:30 a.m. in Bellingham. It's a 3 p.m. pregame, 5 p.m. kickoff for Seattle Seahawks pregame action tomorrow night. KGMI dependable forecast, partly cloudy and 70 today. Maybe some rain tomorrow. 59 now in Bellingham. Mike Davis, KGMI News.
Yes, we do have a bug problem in Whatcom County corn. We touched on this last week, saying this could be a growing issue. Now we know for sure it is a huge issue for the corn crop in Whatcom County. Most of the corn crop, of course, other than a few rows here and there and a few gardens and more small-time kind of consumer-level stuff. But the bulk of the corn crop in Whatcom County is not sweet corn. It's field corn for the cows, for a forage product. I'm always reminding people of that. Go ahead. You can go out and try to eat it, but you aren't going to enjoy it. It's very starchy, and it's designed for high nutrition for cows. Cows love it. To make a feed that can last all winter long and into next spring helps cows stay healthy and produce a lot of milk and good things that the dairy industry in Whatcom County likes. But that's the concern right now. What will the corn crop be now that there's this bug problem? And we're checking back in. We talked with him last week about it, as I just mentioned, and he joins us again now for kind of an update, and it's not a good one. Lance Honkoop, agronomist with Ellenboss Agronomy. And also he's my cousin. So I've been hearing a lot from you, Lance, about this. It sounds really bad. It's called the Western Corn Rootworm, right? I still have the name right?
You got it right, Dylan.
Okay, so you're saying you've been telling me this is really, really bad out there. In fact, you took me to a field up in Sumas this past, during the week, and I couldn't believe it. There were bugs everywhere, and they were just chewing the heck out of these plants.
Yeah. It's a very destructive little bugger. Right now, we're really focusing on keeping the silks from getting clipped back too far. So basically, we have this little beetle that's crawling around, flying around, and it's clipping all the silks. And it's right during the time of pollination.
Explain to people who aren't familiar with how corn works, what the silks are, the silks, the tassels, how pollination really works for people not familiar.
So when you see the corn growing, it gets to about this time of year, and you'll start to see the little tassels, the flowers up on top of the corn on the plant, and you'll also see where the ear starts developing. It'll pop out, and there's all these little strands, we call them silk, and basically the pollen's coming off the flower onto that silk, and it's basically it's pollinating the corn, and that's going to be your kernel.
Technically,
every one of those silks is a kernel.
Technically, each one of those silk pieces is a little tube that carries whatever it is from the tassel back down into the ear to pollinate each and every kernel. So every silk,
yep.
I mean, you're talking, this bug is eating those silk strands.
Story.
If it's eaten too far back, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there's not going to be a kernel associated with that silk anymore. And in fact, if an ear has all the silk eaten off of it, there will be no kernels on that ear.
That's exactly right. And then there's really no point in growing corn because that's what we're growing it for, is for the kernel. That's starch, and starch is milk. And it's kind of a big problem. So we're really out there monitoring it, walking fields, you know, concentrating on the fields that are really bad, you know, and some fields get it worse than others.
So are you seeing fields where all the silk is eaten up off of the ears?
I have, yeah. It's not like a whole complete field, but there's huge areas out there that are nipping it down to nothing. And, they're working 24 hours a day. And Yes, the bugs, yes, not us. Yes.
Even though it sounds like you're almost having to work 24 hours a day, as you guys are trying to respond to this problem and check fields and treat fields and do all this kind of stuff. This used to not be a thing around here, right? This is a new thing for at least our area, but it's something that they've been dealing with for a long time back in the Midwest.
Yes, exactly. We saw it first. Last year was our first sighting last fall at harvest time. We were in a field and we noticed weird things going on with it. The kernel, you know, the ears weren't filled out full of grain. There were no silks on them, and the plants were acting like they were blowing over, like they were falling over. And we started doing a little looking around. We found these little flying beetles, and we started doing a little research and figured out that that's exactly what we had. So we knew we were going to have something this year, but we didn't know it was going to be this extreme. We kind of thought we had it kind of pinpointed down to a little area, and we're finding everything from Sumas to Everson to Linden. I have not actually been out to the Ferndale area yet myself. We have a couple of our growers out there. We contacted them, and they're out there scouting right now for us and, you know, taking a look at their fields and see if we do have some problems elsewhere.
And from what you've been saying, it sounds like they have been kind of coming from the Northeast. I think we talked about it last week. Possibly some of these are coming from Canada initially, where they have a harder time treating for them, or maybe they emerged there previously for some reason. Chilliwack area, big dairy, and because of that field corn growing area. So maybe this is some kind of migration of that bug down from that direction, which could be why Sumas is worse. It's moving down Everson, Linden area, and possibly now beyond.
Right. You know, and this little bug, this little beetle actually comes from a little worm that's under the ground early in June. The eggs hatch in early June, and these bugs turn into, or the worms, they're sitting there eating the roots on all these plants all of June and most of July before they actually emerge into a beetle. And it's going to be very interesting come harvest time in this fall when these plants get bigger and heavier. And if we get some wind, if we don't have the root structure down there, it's going to be really interesting. So
there could be some damage that can't even be seen right now that's not even known about.
Exactly. Yes. You know, without actually going out in these fields and digging up plants, you know, we're just basically looking on what's happening above the ground, but we're not sure. There might be more damage than we know, or there might not be. We don't know that. And, you know, in probably just over a month when we start looking at getting into harvest time, month and a half, it'll be interesting, you know, to see what if there is actually any more damage under the ground.
Lance Honkoop is with us right now. He's my cousin, but also an agronomist with Ellenboss Agronomy Services. Based out of Linden, but they're all over the county and into Skagit and even down into Snohomish, all over the place. So you guys are tracking this all over. I know you've been looking at fields that you guys planted and are responsible for, but also you've been looking at fields that other people have planted. You've been seeing this kind of all over the place. It doesn't matter whose field it is or who planted it.
Yeah, it's pretty widespread, you know, and we got a really good relationship with pretty much all the growers and farmers in this county, and work with quite a few of them. And, you know, we're just trying to make it known and make people aware of it and get some more eyes out there for us, you know, because it's not everywhere. And some people might have a couple bugs in their fields and some might have an infestation. It's really weird how we've been seeing real hot spots in places. So we're just trying to, you know, maximize that part of it. So we're just trying to be out there, keep everybody aware what to look for, you know, and because this could be a big problem if all these beetles are laying eggs this fall and they all hatch next year, it could be a very, very large problem. And that's what we're really trying to combat right now.
Well, you've been
as far as getting these beetles sprayed.
You've been talking about counts. And you guys, I know you've been relying on some of the things that they've learned over the many years of dealing with us back in the Midwest. And you've been in touch with folks back there. And they're talking about, for instance, take a look at a corn plant and count the number of beetles that are on it. And they kind of have some thresholds for when you've got a real problem. Talk about what some of those counts are and what they're saying back in the Midwest about what you're telling them about our problem here.
Yeah, so I've been in touch with a few guys in Iowa and Nebraska, and they've been sending me different studies, and we've been emailing back and forth, talking on the phone back and forth. And, you know, when over there, first year they see them, they try and average if you're basically one beetle per plant. That's their threshold for spraying, 1 to 2. And around here, I've been seeing, you know, in your really bad areas, upwards of 10 to 20 possibly.
Yikes.
Per plant. There's plants that I've seen, you know, and it's not every plant, but there is actual plants that I've seen that probably had 50 of these things crawling on it. A lot of the time I'll go out to a field, if you really start seeing the silk damage, there's typically 3 to 4 per plant chewing away on that silk.
So way above what these experts back in the Midwest on this bug, and they've been dealing with it for decades, way beyond what they say is the threshold for dealing with this. This is kind of what they would call an infestation. I mean, when you tell them how many bugs you're seeing out here, what's their reaction?
Oh, they just don't even know what to think. I've been sending them pictures and videos, and they're going, this is crazy. We've never even seen numbers like that on our worst years over in the Midwest. And so I'm really relying on some help from these guys, because, like you said, they've been battling them for decades over there, and this is a brand new thing for us. And as soon as we discovered this, I got on some online forums, started making some phone calls and got contacts. And, you know, we've been working with chemical companies on this to get the right products to spray. And they also the timing thing, you know, you want to make sure these are all out of the ground before you go in and spray. And you also don't want them going back in the ground laying eggs. So we kind of
if there's a plant with 5 beetles on it, say, or if you're saying you're seeing some with 50 beetles on it, I mean, each one of those can probably lay a lot more eggs. Next year, you're talking about hundreds, right? I mean, how many eggs does one of these beetles, just one beetle, lay?
So typically on a very high pollen field, I was just reading an article online a few minutes ago, and they will lay up to 1,000 eggs.
Per beetle?
Per female beetle. They say 400 to 800 is pretty average, but on heavy fields, they've seen up to over 1,000.
Per beetle. So if you see if you see 50 beetles on an infested, out of control problem in a field, which you're finding out there, and it sounds like some people have these infestations out in their field and they don't even know about it because they aren't used to having to go out and scout for bugs at this time of year. You basically plant the corn, you side dress it, and you let it grow, and then you come back at harvest time and deal with it then. So they may not even know this is an issue. But if you have an infestation, you could be talking 50,000 eggs being laid into the ground by these beetles for each plant in the field. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of plants are in one. This could explode.
It's a pretty scary thing when you start thinking about that. They say first year you get about 70% of females, and the rest is males, 30%. So, yeah, you start doing the math, and all of a sudden we get a cold winter, which also I'll touch on that. If you get a really cold winter like we just had, that actually helps these things hatch from an egg versus a very warm, mild winter. And that's why they've been battling this in the Midwest for years, because they have the cold.
It's kind of counterintuitive. You'd think a cold winter kills off more bugs, which some bugs it does. But this bug, it actually helps them?
It actually helps them. So you really can't play your odds on a winter what it's going to be. So that's why we've been out just scouting like crazy and trying to knock these numbers down, because if you start doing the math and looking at it, this population could explode. And, you know, we never really hardly saw anything last fall or last summer. And now look what we have. It's gone crazy.
It sounds so like to me, there's a big concern about this year's crop and whether there's going to be much for ears on some of these fields that are infested. If they're really going to have kernels, they're really going to have nutrition, or if people are just going to end up having to harvest a bunch of green leafy material, which is, I mean, the whole plant is harvested for dairy forage, you know, corn silage. But really the nutrition is packed into that ear, and that's where so much focus is. If you don't have the ears, you don't have the nutrition, you don't have the milk, that could be really, really devastating just this year. But then it looks like the other big thing is really stopping these bugs now before it becomes an epidemic next year.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, I was just in, I just stopped at a customer's place, and I had spotted some bugs in his field, and he wasn't aware of it. And so I told him, you know, I kind of helped him out on a bunch of things there. And, you know, that was his first concern was, am I going to get full ears? Because that's what he relies on to get his milk. Mm-hmm. He feeds a lot of corn silage instead of having to buy alfalfa. He grows his own feed. And, you know, so on the flip side here, you think about it, and all of a sudden you start losing out on your grain. Not only did you lose all your inputs on that crop, now you have to buy grain to supplement it all winter, mm-hmm. and more alfalfa. So, you know, some of these guys, you start thinking that way, well...
And so you're seeing...
That can add up.
You're seeing people out there, you're seeing growers out there who don't even, at this point, and we talked about it last weekend, I know a few people have been talking about it, but you're seeing people who still don't even know that this is a problem, aren't even aware that this bug is in their field right now eating it up?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I've actually contacted a few people in the county this week, and they weren't even aware of it. They actually... one guy I talked to today, he heard about it just last night because his wife was talking to a friend last night, and their field actually was very infested. And so I'm kind of glad I stopped by this morning and talked to him.
What did his field look like? Did he have a problem?
He didn't have a very big problem. I hadn't seen any damage, but I also, it's not a field that I usually track. I just happened to stop in and just take a look, just a random check, and they were there, but I didn't see a lot of mm-hmm. damage happening yet. So it's just a field we're going to monitor for them and keep an eye on it. And
so you're monitoring, you know, even fields that you guys there at Ellenboss didn't plant.
Exactly, and this is one we didn't plant, and we're just monitoring. You know, I'm just looking out for everybody here and keeping as much as we can do.
It sounds like the more you put a stop to these bugs by treating for them and killing them, the better it is for everybody because they spread field to field. And so what? You know, one grower may treat, but if the neighbor doesn't, they could just have the same problem all over again.
Yeah, there is that potential. And we've been spraying like crazy. And I've been going in the field the day after because we have to wait 24 hours. And they're definitely gone. But we are monitoring those just to see if anything does come back or, you know, from a neighbor's or who knows where. So far, I have not seen anything. So I think we'll be okay right now. And the product we're using to spray, it actually has a, they say, a 10 to 14 day window.
Okay.
So we do have some residual there to battle that.
And what's the key to treating? I mean, I know you guys there at Ellenboss Agronomy have that really tall sprayer, so you can actually get that out and spray in these fields. Nobody else has one of those sprayers, though.
Right. No, we've been going out there and spraying with that right now. The really, really tall corn and our 20-inch row spacing corn, we've actually started utilizing the helicopter that they have in the county that they've been using to spray the blueberries with. And we started using him yesterday, and it seems that's going to work real well as an option for us, you know, to get into some of those tall corn fields because we don't want any more damage than we already have. So that's what we got a couple tools that are at our disposal there. And we've just been going in and really monitoring. And we just don't want this to spread. It's probably going to be a maintenance thing every year now. But the way it exploded this year in areas, it's not everywhere, but in certain areas, we really need to watch those numbers. And, you know, if each one's laying 1,000 eggs, we cannot have that for next year.
All right, well, we're out of time for now. Lance Honkoop with Ellenboss Agronomy filling us in, giving us an update on something that we first talked about last week. We appreciate it. I should also mention thank you to Laurel Farm and Western Supply, sponsor this segment here on the Farming Edition of the Morning Show. Thanks for the update. Keep us posted, and best of luck to you folks out there trying to deal with us.
All right, thanks, Dylan.
Take advantage of summer and get the most out of your land. Whether you're mowing the pasture or just tending to your garden, Farmers Equipment has the tools and equipment to help you get the job done. Come on by and test drive a tractor today. See for yourself why Branson Tractors are the best value on the market. Branson Tractors can meet a lot of needs, and Farmers Equipment doesn't just sell the tractors. We also sell all the attachments. Whether it's a rototiller to work up the garden, forks to move stuff around, or a mower to keep things nice and tidy, we have all the tools you need to tackle almost any job. Red, rugged, and reliable. That's Branson Tractors, the best value on the market. Contact Farmers Equipment to learn more about our 0% financing options and current manufacturer rebates on new Branson Tractors. Farmers Equipment, your authorized Branson Tractor dealer, located in Linden, Burlington, and online at farmersequip.com.
Listen each Saturday morning to Radio Real Estate, hosted by local real estate expert Mike Kent.
Everyone knows success in real estate is based on location, location, location. That location on your calendar every Saturday, on your clock, 10 a.m., on your radio dial, AM 790.
Radio Real Estate is sponsored by Bank of the Pacific, Linden Sheet Metal, Pacific Northwest Homes Magazine, and Windermere Real Estate. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI News Talk 790 or the Cascade Radio Group.
It's time for the Outdoor Report, brought to you by Jaeger Sporting Goods on Northwest Avenue in Bellingham.
Hi there, it's Westy at Jaeger's with your Outdoor Report. We've just received our monthly shipment of The Real News magazine, and this August edition has some really great articles and plenty of news for yous who fish the Northwest. It's still free, so all you have to do is stop by the store and pick one up. Shelly from our hunting department was out looking for a bear this past weekend, and she reports that the black flies are horrible this year. Those little monsters will eat you alive, so if you're heading to the high country, wear your head net and use plenty of repellent. I know you hate to wear anything that smelly when you're hunting, but slapping at flies all day long will give you away just as easily. We lost another very dear customer a few days ago. Jerry Wilson was an avid outdoorsman and one of the nicest guys ever to walk through our doors. Our sincerest condolences go out to Jerry's family and friends, and we're going to miss him here too. Sockeye fishing at Baker Lake seems to have slowed down, and a number of fishers have said they're not going back, but PSE is still moving a few fish in the lake every day, so with fewer boats on the water, it might be worth another try. I have a report that kokanee fishing is picked up at Lake Watkin, but I have no details to give you. My guess for there or Lake Sammy should be to troll deep and in the colder parts of the lake. This hot weather will surely have moved the thermocline down considerably and kokanee like 59 degrees or below. Crabbers are telling me they're having a great season in Area 7 South, which is the San Juan Islands in Bellingham. Area 7 North, which is Georgia Strait, opens on the 15th. Hey, don't forget our 12-hour anniversary sale on the 23rd. That's it for this week. Good hunting and fishing. Thanks for listening.
Jaeger Sporting Goods on Northwest Avenue in Bellingham.
Jenny, can you believe we've owned and operated Kent's for 18 years? It just seemed to fly by.
Well, maybe for you it did, but back then you didn't have all that gray hair.
And you weren't so chubby.
We really are lucky. We get to work with great employees and our wonderful customers coming back year after year.
But don't you think it's time that Kent's entered the computer digital age? I'm thinking of Twittering.
Twittering? Don't you mean tweeting?
Yes, Twittering. Since you're running the Facebook, letting our customers know all about our new arrivals and specials, I thought I'd pitch in.
Oh, Nancy, I think you better let me Facebook and you, well, you go back out in the nursery and tweet around with the birds.
Well, I'm just glad you're getting the good word out, Jenny.
Check out Kent's website and Facebook for monthly specials and how you can win a $250 shopping spree to the largest nursery in town. Kent's Garden and Nursery on Northwest Drive in Bellingham.
KGMI News Update.
KGMI News time is 7:33, 59 degrees in Bellingham, heading for a cloudy high of 70 today. President Trump has assured the governor of Guam that residents will be safe as North Korea threatens to fire intercontinental ballistic missiles at the island. Guam's Civil Defense Office is offering islanders guidance on preparing for an attack. ABC's Jim Avila reports from Guam.
The threat from the North Koreans is not to send their missiles to the land itself of Guam, but instead 20 miles out into the ocean. Less of a threat to the people here and more of an intimidation tactic for the United States. Guam has already been too close to two world wars. In fact, divers here tell me that beneath the blue waters here, you can find wrecks from both wars. The question now is, will North Korea leave some of its weapons right off the shores of Guam?
North Korea has lashed back at the U.S. following President Trump's latest warnings to them. In an editorial on Saturday, North Korea's Minju Joseon newspaper said that the U.S. finds itself in an ever-worsening dilemma, quote, being thrown into the grip of extreme security unrest by the DPRK. A group that represents farmers says saving imperiled salmon in the Columbia Snake River system is too costly and now is turning to the Trump administration. The Irrigators Association wants the government to convene a cabinet-level committee with the power to allow exemptions to the Endangered Species Act. Environmental groups call the request a publicity stunt and say it could hurt fishing companies and others that rely on healthy runs of federally protected salmon and steelhead. There are now three lawsuits against Seattle's new income tax on wealthy households. The Conservative Freedom Foundation sued the city this week. Investment manager Michael Kunoth says five people represented by former Republican State Attorney General and candidate for Governor Rob McKenna are also suing.
If the city prevails in this case, watch for other cities and perhaps even counties, I suppose, to move to enact local income taxes and watch for a move to enact a statewide income tax.
McKenna spoke to Como News. The new measure imposes a 2.25% tax on income above $250,000 for single filers. The state's high court is upholding Seattle's tax on gun and ammo sales. The tax adds $25 to the price of each gun sold in the city and 2 or 5 cents per round of ammunition. The proceeds fund gun violence research. Dave Workman with the Second Amendment Foundation tells Como the tax is driving gun sellers out of Seattle.
It has pushed gun dealers, at least one that we know of, Sergei Solyanek at Precise Shooter, pushed him out of the city. And there have been reports, rumors, and suggestions that Outdoor Emporium is going to pick up and leave, too.
The NRA argues the tax is illegal because Washington prohibits local governments from adopting laws related to guns. The state Supreme Court disagrees. KGMI dependable forecast, going to see partly cloudy skies, a high 70 today, winds south at 10 on the water. Cloudy and 58 tonight, a good chance of rain tomorrow, about a 50% chance. Morning through afternoon, high of 67 tomorrow. It's 59 now in Bellingham. Mike Davis, KGMI News.
We're back. We continue. This is the farming edition of the morning show on KGMI News Talk 790 AM and 96.5 FM. I'm Dylan Honkoop, your host. Monday through Saturday mornings, I guess. Monday through Friday, we're 8 to 9, and we talk about all kinds of issues. But on Saturday mornings, we start an hour early, and we talk about things that are important to agriculture here in Whatcom and Skagit counties and the Pacific Northwest. One of the big stories that the local agricultural community, certainly, as well as the community at large, has been following in recent days, and this really all came to a head about a week ago, is what some have termed, I'm using air quotes here, they've called labor unrest. Workers with frustrations and concerns and complaints at a blueberry farm in the Sumas area. And what is really going on in this situation? A lot of people have been asking questions. A lot of activists have been involved, and they've made a lot of statements. We've heard written statements from this company that owns the farm, Sarbanan Farms, owned ultimately by the parent company Munger Farms, based out of California. And we have a spokesman from the farm joining us here on the Farming Edition this morning to talk about what's been going on there at Sarbanan Farms up in Sumas, based on Rock Road, if I have that correct. And I have been up in that area and saw the camp of the folks who have left and have set up camp and have held some protests and have a lot of things to say about all of this. I've also been past the farm where they've had to bring in security as people, who knows who's doing what, and people walking around and saying things and protesting, things like that. Cliff Woolley, the chief administrative officer of Sarbanan Farms and the parent company Munger Farms, joins us right now. Cliff, talk about what actually happened here. A lot of this started, and it was a really sad story. One of your workers passed away at the hospital after, from what it sounds like, having some kind of medical condition. What was happening there?
Well, yeah, basically it started then on Wednesday, August 2nd. About noon of that day, then Mr. Silva and his nephew came to the office there of the farm, and it said that he had been that he had a severe headache at the time. And then the nephew said that he was concerned because his uncle had run out of his medicine for the diabetes sometime before. And so upon hearing that, then the company management then immediately diagnosed that he needed to get to a hospital. They'd have requested that they wanted to go perhaps to the doctor and get some medicine, but immediately started making arrangements for him to go to the hospital. And then as his condition worsened in a few minutes, actually, then they called an ambulance who got there within about 5 minutes. And they took him then to the nearest local hospital.
Okay. And again, it's Ernesto Silva Ibarra, the name of this employee. He apparently passed away then on Sunday after this happened, after being taken down to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, ultimately after being taken by ambulance from and he wasn't in the field when this first happened, right? He had gone back to the residence or the housing that he had there.
Well, yeah, actually, he went to work just as usual that morning. You know, he actually clocked in, you know, worked for 3.5 hours in the morning. The temperature was like 61 degrees in the morning, and you know, never got above 90. So it, basically, when he came in at lunchtime, which, you know, our fields are right next to the living quarters, so when he and his nephew came in at lunchtime, that's when he complained to his nephew about his headache, and that's when his nephew convinced him to go to the office.
And ultimately, this man suffered from what? Type 1 diabetes and had run out of his medication to keep his insulin in balance.
Well, yeah, that would be... Yeah, I don't know the medical terms or things on that. I know the hospital has made a statement that they considered it, you know, he died of natural causes, and they're not investigating anything beyond that. Now, actually, we do have good relationships with the family. I've, you know, worked with the nephew and also with the wife, and they're very appreciative of, you know, all the help and, you know, the efforts that the Munger family made in their behalf, and so they've agreed that they will release the medical information as soon as they're made available.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see more from that. And again, we're talking with Cliff Woolley right now. He's a chief administrative officer of Sarbanand Farms. This is the farm up in the Sumas area that after this happened, this tragic death that we've just been talking about, after that happened, it kind of became a rallying cry for people, workers there, other workers, colleagues of this man, apparently, who are saying, you know, making accusations of unsafe working conditions and poor treatment by the farm. So talk about some of these things that people are accusing. They're saying that it was too hot. They're complaining about the heat and lack of water to keep themselves hydrated as they're working. We've also been dealing with wildfire smoke in this area, and they were saying that was a problem. And that hours were long and all of these things were very difficult. What's, I guess, the company response to that? We've heard written response, but what do you have to say about that? Were these people being pushed too hard to work too hard in bad conditions?
No. Yeah. You know, the company has well-established policies of what are safe working conditions to make sure that there's always water and shade and other conveniences available whenever workers are in the field, and that especially in working with blueberries, which is a very sensitive and perishable crop, you know, we don't pick in excessive heat, and in fact, often we don't allow workers to go out when perhaps they would want to, because to get good quality berries, you need to pick them in cooler conditions. And but anyway, it's company wide and been, I guess, audited by third-party auditors and certified that we always follow, you know, certified working practices in all areas.
So I had been hearing some people complaining they didn't have shade and that they had been trying to have lunch under even just the shade of the blueberry bushes, but then that wasn't allowed because of food safety and good agricultural practices sort of rules, and that they were forced to be out. And you're saying that's just simply not true?
Yeah, that's just simply not true. You know, shade is available. The camp is right on the farm, and so there are good places for them to eat lunch. So that is not true.
Some people have been comparing this to frustrations and concerns that people had raised down at Sakuma Brothers Farms, and the same groups kind of organizing people against the companies and setting up camps, organizing protests, all these kinds of things are involved here as well. But I see some differences as well in that these workers that were involved and the workers that apparently had been making some complaints that these groups are trying to bring forward, these activist groups like Community to Community Development, the difference is those workers are H-2A workers or guest workers, primarily from Mexico, from what I understand, and that brings a whole different set of rules to bear on how these workers are handled and treated and paid and taken care of. Am I correct? I mean, this is a whole, it's a pretty big investment for your company to bring these kinds of workers in.
Yes, it is. First, I actually would say is that we've always, from the very beginning, tried to encourage and bring in all the local workers that we can. But with ours and many other farms expanding blueberry acreages, there just simply has been a very significant labor shortage. And so each year we had more and more difficulty getting enough. In fact, even the very first year we were short and our crop always suffered because we did not have enough labor. So then for 2015 and 16, we had very good success in bringing in groups of H-2A workers that came in and worked just for the period of the harvest and then left. But yeah, as you said, it's a very expensive program in that the employer pays for all the expense for the workers to travel from their home to the border, all their expenses of crossing the border, and then travel expenses including meals as they travel up, and then the housing is all inspected and certified that it meets all safe and clean housing requirements. And that is provided pre to the workers. And then the very first week that they arrive, they're guaranteed 35 hours at least of work, even if the crop is not ready to be harvested, so that they'll have cash. And then through the season, then they're guaranteed that they'll, as long as they want to, and as long as they, they're doing their part of their contract, they're able to stay through the season. However, at any time, anyone who is not happy or maybe something changed at home, they're always free to leave because they always have their passport, so they're always free to go home at any time.
They have their passport, which holds a visa, essentially. What this is, a work visa for this temporary guest worker program, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, the H-2A visa is for their travel. It gives them permission to come into the United States and to work on a specific farm. So it's not for traveling back home. It's for just giving them permission to stay in the area as long as they're working on that farm. And it only applies to working on that farm.
And you mentioned it's not about them traveling back home because they don't need a visa to be able to go back home to the country of their origin, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Again, Cliff Woolley is with us, Chief Administrative Officer of Sarbanan Farms, as well as the parent company, Munger Farms. That's been the target of a lot of criticism of late, and we're asking him point blank here about some of these issues and what's really going on with this. You talk about the worker shortage, and we certainly have heard that from many other operators here in the county, local farms that have been dealing with this trend for a long, long time. I know multiple times I've had Marty Mayberry, a Mayberry Packing, on the air to talk about the struggles that, where they have crop that they can't even get in. You're talking about the same thing, Cliff, the situation where you have crop that you've grown, but you just don't have the number of people available to bring that crop in. And in some cases, you have to leave fruit out on the vines to rot because you don't have what it takes to get it in. I wonder about that with this guest worker program. That sounds like really expensive labor when you add in all of these other requirements above and beyond what a local worker would get. Couldn't that translate into more funds then or more higher wages then for a local worker to be able to attract more people? I mean, how does that all equate? Because it sounds expensive to do this.
Well, it is actually. I mean, and then the local workers that are working on our farm right now at this time, they're getting paid the same, under the same rate and contract that the H-2A workers are offered. But even with that, there's just not enough local people to go around.
It's a challenging situation for agriculture here and in a lot of other places, certainly up and down the West Coast. Which, talk a little bit about Munger Farms and Sarbanan Farms. You guys do a lot of different crops in a lot of different places, from what I understand.
Well, actually, we're not that large, really. We're a family farming operation, and we pretty well, we're along the West Coast. We have farms here in California, and our main crops here are blueberries and pistachios.
Okay.
We have some almonds, and then we, farm some blueberries and hazelnuts in Oregon, and then we have just all blueberries up there in Washington. But it's just a family farming operation.
So it sounds kind of like blueberries are your number one thing as a farm.
It takes up most of our time. Very intense. Yes.
How many total acres of blueberries do you guys farm?
About 3,000.
About 3,000 acres between the different places that you grow them. And again, it's Cliff Langley, our guest right now, Chief Administrative Officer of Sarbanan Farm. So what happens next on the farm with all of this? I know some workers have left. Others were fired. Am I correct? Because of things that were going on. If I saw some of the documentation, it was listed as insubordination because of things that they were doing. Talk about what's actually happening with that.
Yeah, I guess point. There were the 65 workers that on Friday morning refused to go to work. With the terms of their contract, which they signed is that again they don't have to work. But if they don't work, then they don't qualify under the H-2A program to be in the area. So if they're not willing to work, then they have to go home.
So it's not even necessarily, I mean, as a had a workplace, I know certainly if I said I wasn't going to work here at my job, they would say, well, we're going to have to let you go. But it's even beyond you guys as a business making that call. Legally, it sounds like that there's some requirements with immigration issues there because of that.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, that's the term of the contract, and when they signed that contract, that's what gave them permission to come to the United States. And so if they don't abide by the contract, so when they broke that contract by refusing to work, then we made note of that, and then we submitted then their termination notice to the authorities, letting them know that they broke the contract and it's now terminated. And so then they just have a reasonable amount of time that they need to return home.
Is there anything that can be done to answer their concerns, address their concerns, or help these folks out who say they're having a hard time?
Well, they've always actually, we have regular meetings nearly daily with all the workers in the camp, and so they always have that ability to come and let us know of any concerns, which people have at time to time, and they're always been responded to that most people are very complimentary of the food, which are provided by local catering services. They have a nice eating facility that's complete with televisions. They have nice conditions there at the camp. Whatcom area, climate and the fields are good to work in. So the over 500 people that are still out there working are, I think, having a good week.
Yeah, so really the group of people that we're talking about here is 10%. Approximately 10% of the total workforce that apparently has these concerns or has taken these steps, at least, to say they're frustrated and they were going to walk off the job, essentially. Cliff Woolley, Chief Administrative Officer of Sarbanan Farms, Munger Farms, thanks for your time on the program this morning. I guess for you guys, the next steps are just to see what happens. You're saying there's nothing else you guys can do?
Well, no, we've actually gone beyond the contract in that we have offered, even though we're not required to pay their way back home. And so currently what is happening today is we've extended that offer, made sure they all had all their checks and pay that they were due. And now we gave them the choice. They can either fly home or ride a bus home, and we will pay their expenses and also give them cash for travel. And so they're just signing up on the list of which way they want to go home. So the company has offered to do that for them.
And so far, what's the response been from those groups?
Well, we're waiting for their response, but my understanding is they're accepting it and trying to decide how they want to go home.
Well, thanks. Keep us posted. And it's interesting to find out what the real story is, what's really going on the ground there at Sarbanan Farms up in Sumas, where this has been happening. Cliff Woolley, again, CAO for Munger Farms, the parent company. Thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
If you had to pick a word to describe the type of tractor or utility vehicle you'd want to care for the land you love, I would bet you'd pick the word tough. Well, it's a good thing my friends at Mahindra build the toughest tractors and utility vehicles on Earth. Right now, bring your old tractor or UTV in and trade up to tough with savings on a brand new Mahindra. That's right. Just trade in the other guys and pay zero down and get 0% financing for up to 60 months or up to $8,400 in real cash back and savings. Plus, Mahindra's industry-leading warranty still comes standard. So get your work done, America, with a Mahindra. Learn more about the world's number one selling tractor at MahindraUSA.com.
Take advantage of rock-bottom prices and test drive a Mahindra today at Town & Country Tractor in Monroe or call 360-794-5426. That's 360-794-5426.
And now, You Are There with Jerry Stewart.
Hello, I'm Jerry Stewart. If you're like me, you're one of the lucky ones born and raised in the 50s and 60s. Lucky how? In a moment you will know, because you are there. Hello, Jerry Stewart here. I've been around for a long time, a lot of years here in America, and honestly, I can't believe I've ever seen a time in our nation where there is so much anger and bickering between our national leaders. And all of this bickering is not good for our nation. It's a waste of time and a waste of money. Has it always been this way in our America? No. There once was a time when our leaders would work together, solve problems, and they served our nation. Want to hear some powerful, true historical stories of America? Call my office now at 817-576-2976 and ask for 10 of my favorite stories of our America. And the cost? Just $19.95, and that includes shipping and handling. So call now to get your copy of these powerful stories of our America. Call now, and you'll also get my book, Saving America, for free. It's 817-576-2976, or order online at jerrystewartusa.com. Call now. If you're like me, you're one of the lucky ones born and raised in the 50s and 60s when life was a lot simpler. And us kids didn't think we knew so much, so we asked our parents. My dad was a wealth of knowledge and advice, but he didn't just lay it out to you all the time. He waited for just that appropriate moment or circumstance so that the point he made was so much clearer. If I got in trouble or made a mess of things, he would say, "Jerry, you didn't get yourself into this mess overnight, so don't expect it to be fixed overnight." In other words, you reap what you sow, and the reaping always takes longer than the sowing. Another of my dad's favorites was, "Son, the best lessons learned are those that hurt the most, but don't kill you." In other words, this may hurt a lot, but you'll never forget the pain, and that painful memory will be a help to you in the future should you consider repeating your same mistake. In the 1960s, there was this TV show called Leave It to Beaver. It was about a normal family with a father, Ward, who was always there to teach his boys how to do things, and when they got in trouble, to help them understand just what they had done and where they had gone wrong. There was the mother, June, who was always there to feel the boys' pain, to comfort them as only a mother can do, and to help keep Ward calm whenever the boys took him to the height of frustration. There was Wally, the older, more athletic son. And of course, there was Theodore Beaver Cleaver, kind of a nerd kid that never seemed to be able to stay out of trouble. I loved that show as a boy, and today, as I catch an episode on reruns, I still like to watch it. But what I notice now is that there was always a subtle moral and life message wrapped inside of each episode. The truth is this: I miss my mom and my dad. They're both gone to heaven now, and I know that I will see them again, but I miss my own mom's gentle touch and reassuring words, and I miss the lessons of wit and wisdom and example imparted by my dad. I would like to encourage those of you who still have children at home to not miss those opportunities to teach your children, to find some of those little life lessons and quips and sayings that you heard as a kid and then pass them on. In case it's been so long since you heard any good ones, here's a few words to impart compliments of one of our U.S. presidents, Abraham Lincoln. Regarding his ancestry, he said, "I don't know what my grandfather was. I am more concerned to know what his grandson will be." Regarding his character, he said, "Character is like a tree, and reputation like its shadow. The shadow is what you think of it, but the real thing is the tree." Regarding duty, Abraham Lincoln said, "Let us have faith that right makes might. Regarding his relationship with God, he said, "I've been driven many times to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I have nowhere else to go." So parents, especially dads, ask yourself this question: what do I wish I had learned earlier in life that I didn't? What can I say to my children today that will help their tomorrows? Then find a way to pass that wisdom on. But hurry, your time is almost gone. I'm Jerry Stewart, and now you know, because you are there.
KGMI Bellingham.
HD2, 92.9 KISM.
And 96.5 FM in Bellingham.